What's entailed in the first and second seal of the tribulation period? I'm Dr. Fred. You're listening to another episode of Study, Grow, Know.
Welcome to Study, Grow, Know, where we discuss theology, prophecy, and current political issues from a conservative biblical perspective. Here's your host, Dr. Fred DeRuvo.
Well, thank you for listening to another episode of Study, Grow, Know with me. I'm Dr. Fred, and we are continuing in our series on the tribulation. And again, we've emphasized a number of things about the tribulation. First of all, we're speaking about a specific time frame in mind that we believe is highlighted in Daniel 9, 24 through 27. Verse 27 specifically, where it talks about the final week. That week there translates to a 7-year period, as it does throughout that chapter 9. So we're not talking about general tribulations that apply to or affect everyone, including Christians on earth. We're talking about a specific period of time known as the tribulation period. We believe that week, the 7 years, is still in front of us, and that constitutes the 70th week of Daniel chapter 9. We have books out on that subject, but that's what this series is focusing on, the tribulation period. What starts it, how long it lasts, the judgments that take place in it, who's in control of it. So if you're just joining us in this series right now, I would request, for your own sake, that you go back and start with the first in this series to get caught up. But we reinforce the idea that the coming tribulation will begin with one specific event, which we've outlined in Daniel 9:27, when Antichrist steps onto the world stage and essentially does what no one else has ever successfully done, brokered peace with Israel and the surrounding Arab nations. It will be time for worldwide celebrations, as you can imagine, as far as godless humanity is concerned. Please stop. Stop and consider the ramifications of just this one particular event. Many presidents of the United States have tried to broker some type of peace agreement between Israel and surrounding nations. On certain occasions, it seems to have been going someplace, but something's always derailed it. There will come a time in the future when a man who is probably alive right now, who will become the Antichrist, will step up to the plate and will successfully confirm a covenant with Israel and the surrounding nations of Arabs. And that covenant will be for 7 years. Now, that's the way it's going to look. Once all parties sign on the dotted line where that covenant is concerned, the world is going to go, wow, there is peace in the Middle East. That's amazing. Hamas will stop shooting. The Palestinians will stop shooting. Everybody will put down their weapons, hopefully. That's the way it's going to look to the world. And we also discussed, by the way, a number of things related to the tribulation, including whether or not the tribulation period is a time of God's wrath, or whether it's a mixture of man's wrath against man or Satan's wrath against humanity, including all of these things. Now, I believe the entirety, as I've mentioned, the entirety of the 7 years that is still in front of us is just that, as noted, God's wrath. And you've got to understand this. That no one mentioned in the first paragraph of the chapter is also the event that reveals the Antichrist. No one event mentioned that I've already discussed is also the event that reveals the Antichrist. According to Paul in 2 Thessalonians 2, for anyone who's paying attention and knows what God's word says on the subject, all right, there is the one event that's mentioned. All right. Paul goes on to explain in the same chapter, again, we're talking about 2 Thessalonians 2, that eventually this same Antichrist will take his place in the holy place of the obviously rebuilt temple. Now, how intricate and detailed will this rebuilt temple be? We don't know, but obviously it will be rebuilt enough to have the sacrificial system once again begin. But halfway through this, as it says in Daniel 9 also, 27, the Antichrist will do something to cease the sacrifices from happening. And in doing so, he's going to defile the Jewish temple. And according to Matthew 24, the Olivet Discourse, the Jews will flee, and Antichrist will turn his attention to Christians. Now, it's a bit slightly convoluted here, because in the Olivet Discourse, Jesus is talking about near events and far events. Certainly he was referencing the upcoming judgment that did occur in AD 70, where the Jews did flee, where the temple was, in a sense, defiled because it was destroyed. But one thing did not happen that is supposed to happen, and that's the Antichrist going inside the temple, who will sit down, according to Paul in 2 Thessalonians 2, and declare himself to be God. That didn't happen in AD 70. But something akin to it happened in 168 BC, and Jesus refers to that event. And it's recorded for us in Daniel. And that's why he refers to Daniel. But now we're talking about something that's going to happen in the future. Something that has not happened yet. How do we know it hasn't happened yet? Because the tribulation period has not officially begun yet. Revelation 12 also depicts, in brief, the entirety of God's plan of salvation. Now note, if you go to Revelation 12, verse 7, and following, the devil who had tried to kill the Messiah in the previous verses, but was unsuccessful, must fight against Michael the archangel, but Satan is at that point finally kicked out of heaven and thrown down to the earth. From that point on, it appears as though Satan is now bound to the earth instead of being able to use the air to travel. That's fascinating. Peter tells us that he constantly goes before the throne to accuse us. Well, when we get to this part in Revelation, it appears that Satan is actually literally finally cast out from heaven. He no longer has access to the throne where he can accuse. In verse 13, toward the end of chapter 12, Satan tries to persecute the woman. That's symbolic for Israel, but is blocked from doing so. And we learn that in verse 17, Satan turns his attention to the children of the woman. The children here refers to Christians who have salvation because of the nation of Israel, through which the Messiah was born into this world, lived a life of sinless perfection, offered himself as our substitute, died a sinner's death, though no sin was ever found in him. But yet, we're told in Corinthians, he became sin who knew no sin. And he rose again on the third day. Now, we left off with the first seal of the tribulation period. We've talked briefly about this, which is the rider on the white horse. He comes as though he is pursuing peace. He has a bow, Revelation 6:2, but no mention of arrows. And this would likely signify that he's not interested in creating a physical war and using that to conquer people and nations. Instead, he uses diplomacy and politics to accomplish his goals, to conquer people and nations. He's going to be very slick. This is reminiscent of what occurred during the so-called Cold War. Now, if you get my book, which is going to be coming out, I've got charts and other things included in it. But one of the charts that I've included in the book is the signing of the covenant. It shows all the seven sealed judgments in one chart, just laid out from end to end, so we can get a bird's eye view, a linear bird's eye view of what's happening. Now, the signing of the covenant between Israel and the Arab nations around her, that's accomplished by the Antichrist. And this is the beginning, as I've mentioned, of the seven-year tribulation period. What is actually labeled Seal 1 on the chart that I refer to in my book is likely tied in with what he accomplishes over time, but begins conquering politically with the signing of the covenant. Ultimately, Antichrist is setting Israel up. He conquers Israel without using weapons of war. He conquers politically. Antichrist, needs Israel to be at peace with their neighbors. He needs this. He needs Israel to come to believe that he is behind them and supports them. Ultimately, the Antichrist, without question, needs the Jewish temple to be rebuilt because of how he will defile it at the midway point of the tribulation period, 3.5 years into it. Remember, in Daniel 9:27, it says he will form a covenant, he will confer a covenant with the many, and in the middle of the week, he will cause the sacrifices to cease. How does he do that? By defiling. And how is it the middle of the week? The middle of the 7-year period, which is 3.5 years in. He causes the sacrifices to cease. And in order to have the Jewish temple rebuilt, there must be peace in the world to some extent. And Arabs must be willing to allow it for some semblance of peace to exist. Here's Daniel 9:27. He will make a firm covenant with the many for 1 week, but in the middle of the week he will put a stop to sacrifice and grain offering, and on the wing of abominations will come one who makes desolate, even until a complete destruction, one that is decreed, is poured out on the one who makes desolate. This is a very interesting verse. So here we see he's going to make a covenant with the many for 1 week, 7 years. In the middle of the week, 3.5 years in, he puts a stop to the sacrifice and grain offering. And on the wing of abominations will come one who makes desolate. Who makes it desolate? The Antichrist. Even until a complete destruction, one that is decreed, is poured out on the one who makes desolate. So the Antichrist is going to come. Originally, he's going to create a covenant with many for a week, 7 years. But in the middle of the week, 3.5 years in, he's going to do something that will stop the sacrifice and grain offering. And then he will make things desolate. But then he will be the one where desolation and destruction is poured out on him. Daniel 9:27. The Antichrist makes the covenant because of his ulterior motives. Halfway through the tribulation period, he will completely defile the Jewish temple, as Antiochus Epiphanes did in 168 BC. Look it up in history. It's there. And also Matthew 24, making it completely unsuitable and unusable for worship, as was the case following Antiochus's defilement of the standing Jewish temple in 168 BC. Antichrist is going to do what Paul tells his Thessalonian readers he will do. 2 Thessalonians 2:3-4. Quote, "The man of lawlessness who opposes and exalts himself above every so-called god or object of worship, so that he takes his seat in the temple of God, displaying himself as being God." This is the guy who is going to waltz into the existing temple, however it looks, however it appears. There will be enough of it so that the sacrificial system can begin again, and then the Antichrist will waltz into the Holy of Holies, and he will sit most likely on the mercy seat, and he will declare himself to be God. Now, I find it fascinating that God himself has revealed these things to us, and still people respond with, well, that's not what God means. Yes, that's exactly what God means, and it is very plain. God has not made understanding his word purposefully difficult. That defeats his purposes. These things will come to pass whether people believe them or not. He wants us to understand the truth of his words. And it's not to be achieved through allegorizing scripture or reading into it. It is supposed to be read with meaning taken out of it. And whose meaning? God's meaning. When we approach his word at any portion, we should always be asking the question, what does God mean for me to know? What is his intended meaning for me? So by the time the Antichrist comes onto the scene, the world, which is moving toward a one-world government, and by the way, that's happening now anyway, it will be fully united. In fact, the world will have already been made one in community or government, and will also have been divided into 10 sections. We'll get into that a little bit more next time, but you can refer to Revelation 17:12 for that. It talks about the 10 horns. Well, thank you for joining me, and until we meet again, I pray that God will open your eyes to show you how blessed you are in him.
You've been listening to Study, Grow, Know with Dr. Fred DeRuvo. please join us each week for new broadcasts that deal with theology, prophecy, and political issues from a biblical, conservative perspective.